Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. Wastelanders and Vault Dwellers, welcome back to the Fallout Lorecast. We are discussing the final episode of Season 2, and when I say we, I've got John back.
I'm back!
John's back! If you know John from, first of all, we did the recaps of all of Season 1 just, 2 months ago? And yeah, and so John's back to talk to me and you all about his thoughts on the final end of the season and all of that. But we also do the Retro Recall podcast together, where we get to go revisit games we haven't played in 30 years, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Battletoads and all sorts of things. So go check that out. And of course, he does the 40K Lorecast and all of that. John, welcome back. I'm so excited to talk about this episode with you and recap the season
too,
a little bit.
It was a really nice recap and had some amazing elements, that's to say the least. I was my wife was confused why I was tearing up at one point. She's
Yes, we're gonna get there for sure. Yeah. There were some great moments. This is a wonderful finale for the season, but there's so much to cover. So I don't want to take too much of your time. We're gonna get right into it. And I've typically I try to go scene by scene, but there were lots of intercuts on this episode. So we're gonna go kind of topic by topic. So let's start it off. Let's start with the Legion. We have some very quick moments, but very important moments with the Legion and Macaulay Culkin's character. What did you think about that?
Well, first off, I was confused why we had Macaulay Culkin for like 7 minutes of a show up until this point. I'm like, did they really just not use him? He's kind of a famous actor.
Right.
So
right.
We should have more of it. But I did like, I like that we kind of brought the Legion back in, because one thing I was upset about up to this point was the Legion was something that was mentioned. And one thing for me was, as a player of the games, I know the Legion. I know him through.
Right.
But I was having to explain to her. So I watched it with my wife, who's never played a single minute of Fallout. I'm having to explain to her what the Legion is, why this is such a big deal, all these things. So I like them bringing the Legion back in. And obviously the discovery of Caesar saying, there shall be no more, Kaisar.
Kaisar.
There shall be no more Kaisar.
Right. I am Kaisar. I am the Legion. It ends with me is the actual quote on the.
And then Macaulay Culkin going, no, it doesn't.
he kills the guy, eats the thing, swallows it. And becomes the new Kaisar. So it makes sense that he was cast for something bigger than this, which I assume is going to play into season three. And I'm getting a little ahead of myself. But if they continue into Colorado and further to the east, that's probably more Legion territory.
Yes, very much so. I mean, that's where the Legion supposedly came from.
Right. So it probably still is, I would assume. Mm-hmm. But that also opens up the ability for them to kind of go in any direction, because now they're not stuck with the things we know about New Vegas. I mean, Tactics was kind of Colorado, but Tactics is a much older game. And it's one of those entries where I believe Bethesda still considers it canon, but it's kind of a side entry in the series. So I feel like they have a little more leverage to kind of do what they want with it.
And I'd have to look up the timing on Tactics. What I don't know on Tactics is when it's set.
Yeah.
It's possible Tactics is old enough that the Legion could have come through post.
I'm pretty sure it was before Legion, and it released before New Vegas, so the Legion hadn't been invented yet. So
exactly.
Yeah, chances are they're going to...
Timelines.
Right. Chances are they're going to do what they want with that area. But anyway, the idea that Caesar was like, no, it ends with me, I am the Legion, all of that, totally not surprised by that. I mean, we get characters like House in New Vegas who says, he's quoted as saying things like, they'll defy him, but give it a year and they'll be breaking down, meaning like the Legion will not survive without Kaisar. And then Joshua Graham from New Vegas says he was a former legate.
Yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce that word.
I think it's legate.
Legate.
I think it's, yeah.
Yeah. Only Kaisar can lead the Legion. The Legion dies without Kaisar. So that's pretty accurate. So we're going to see Macaulay Culkin's character try to keep them together, I would suppose. One of the best quotes from this was at the end, where he says, together we will reclaim the holy land they call Vegas, which immediately is funny because Sin City is now the holy land.
Right. But then the part two of the quote.
Yeah, part two of it.
Yes.
There we'll build a palace worthy of our empire, Kaiser's palace, Caesar's palace, which is a famous casino.
That was a great line.
And it was delivered so dry, with no sense of like the irony or anything. So good. So here, let's move on to when the ghoul walks into House's office, and then of course House appears and starts talking to him. Did you have any thoughts about this scene before I go into any of the specifics? Well, actually,
one thing I did want to mention back when we talked about Kaisar was the burned man, yes. Joshua Grant.
Joshua Grant, right.
Is a piece of, because that's kind of the other piece here is that we've had within the Kaisar's Legion, people almost defect and move away. And this is where you do see the brutality seems to be the trick to it. So this is where Macaulay Culkin's character coming into this. This is more just me personally, because it's Macaulay Culkin. I'm actually really interested in what he can do in season 3, because this character, this role, the only way that you could unify that Legion is to be absolute brutality.
Yeah, dominance, dominance. Yeah.
And I'm excited to kind of see, because I think about the stuff Joshua Graham, you know, in the expansion talked about with Kaisar. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see, can, you know, what do they do with this character coming forward? Because that was Caesar's Legion. You know, was they were just brutal.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, Joshua Graham was, you know, he's the burned man for a reason. He was caught up, and kicked off a side of a cliff or whatever. But so we don't have time to get into that totally. If you are interested in that, I'm sure I've discussed him a little in more detail in previous episodes. Especially with patrons. Patrons have probably brought him up, if I recall, in those episodes. But here, let's move on to the Ghoul and House. What did you think about when they started having their conversation?
Again, nice little backstory. It gives us a bit more kind of emphasis into how House thinks. House now obviously is a computer now, so I liked that little element of it.
Right.
And the whole idea, though, I mean, this whole thing of the two of them when they go for their walk is this amazing. I was always wondering how they were going to give us more information. How do you bring this all together? This was cool. So that conversation starts off with, you know, you're like, oh, okay, he's just going to tell him where it is. No, there's always more with House, and House always has to get something back. I guess I can skip ahead.
House always
bit.
Wins. Yeah, he there says things like it or not, everyone eventually works for me, which I think is going to play into season 3. Before we get into it, I liked how House was not surprised at all by the ghoul's appearance. He knew who he was. It's almost as if he predicted, like, that you are one of those variables, and you showed back up again, and I thought maybe that would happen. He doesn't say that, but, like, you get that sense of it. He also mentions little things, like he was only slightly off about the timing of the end of the world due to those other variables, the other hidden player, the Enclave, which is confirmed. And then the comment about eventually everyone works for me, if we jump ahead to the end of the episode, it ends with Lucy and Max in House's office.
And you see the flash.
Yeah, he's there. Like, we know that screen. That screen doesn't mean that House isn't there. It just means he's not talking to you right now. Mm-hmm. And he kind of blips on the screen. And I have expectations that season 3 will start with a conversation between them and House. And that's going to kind of catapult things in a specific direction.
I think Lucy and House become a very interesting combination, because it is this element of she wants to know more about the world. She wants to know more about, and actually Maximus as well. House, I think that the character arc of House in this season was very interesting to me. When we played the game, House was kind of a bad guy. Then the start of the season, he looks like a very bad guy. But by the end of the season, you're a little bit confused of, he's a bad guy. But we're not Wreck-It Ralph level yet, but we're getting more into that. Like, well, how bad was House? In the sense of, or was House just trying to survive while surrounded by horrid? You know, it's
right. Was he doing terrible things that he felt justified for because the people he was competing with were worse?
Yes.
Right. But that still doesn't mean he's a good guy. It just means he was willing to do what was necessary in order to combat even worse people and situations.
Exactly.
Right. So, it's this interest. Like, that's part of the fun of Fallout is that everything's kind of a shade of gray, right? Like, if the Enclave is black and absolutely terrible.
Fair enough. Yeah. Enclave and Kaisar's Legion.
Right.
That's about as evil as
you get. Yeah. Right. Not a whole lot of gray. But then you get to characters like, House or the Institute, and it's like, okay, we're starting to talk shades of gray here. Like
Brotherhood of Steel.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of good villains have very good motivational reasons. They believe they're the good guy, even if they're doing terrible things. Hank is an example of that. He thinks he's helping the Wasteland. He thinks he's doing the right things.
Yeah.
But like, he's also turning everybody into zombies, remote controlled zombies, and taking away their freedom. So that's not necessarily a good thing either. Well, here, let's talk about Lucy and Congressman Welch's head.
Yes.
This is so fun because you and I didn't get to really talk throughout this season. So I'm getting kind of updates as we go as to your thoughts on this. What do you think about her?
Well, okay, the Congressman Welch thing, first time you see her, like, why is she in this? But then at the end, it all makes sense because they have to shove someone in charge of effectively running this whole operation. And what I'm trying to ascertain from it is it looks like they needed someone who was kind, but also simple.
Hank's idea was that he was taking her personality and using that to program the chips, which would then affect the people so that not only were they mind controlled, but they also had pleasant personalities, because that's important to Hank, which is a very Hank thing, right?
Right. But what I think was interesting about it, what I did like, was her just like, kill me. Like, yes. It's just that little bit, that was just funny. If nothing else, it was just funny. It's like, oh, come on. That scene was interesting. It was more that element of like, but hey, what's going on here? What's it? My question is more, who put her there?
Yeah, that's the other question. That's the big question I left with on the last episode where I talked with the patrons was, is she Enclave? Did she know she was helping the Enclave? Was she in on it with the president, with the diode? Or was she just being taken advantage of because she's a kind and nice person? I'm still swaying on the second one. I don't think that she's malicious. I think that if she was malicious, then she wouldn't have been the right personality to use to program the chips. I think she got in the vault due to her position as a congresswoman. And Hank knew that and was taking advantage of her being frozen or whatever.
Oh, so you think that Hank did that to her? See, my thinking was that she was already like that.
No, because she wasn't in a... So heads that have been preserved and used and kept alive for a long time, they're kind of Futurama'd in those little domes with the liquid around it. Her head was sitting on the table out in the open as if it had only been there for a very short period of time. It wasn't decrepit. It was just like slightly decayed. I'm putting those pieces together and I'm going, Hank had set her up just within the previous few weeks or month or however long it had been that he'd been working on those chips and didn't preserve her head more, just kind of pulled it out of cryostasis, stuck it on a table.
Right, but that would make sense, because the reason I was thinking that was in the scene where he blew up Shady Sands, that person had the chip on the back of their neck.
Yes, but that person that's an interesting question. But that person also didn't have a personality thing, and it was a very early version of the chip that barely worked because they were glitching out.
This was the addition he made. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah,
right. So yeah, he probably did something used somebody else to put the chip on the person, contacted them at a distance or something. Like it seems like he still is in contact potentially with the Enclave, or is attempted to. And the events of Shady Sands were also a decade previous to the events we're seeing now, like his kids were still young, all of that. So yeah, those details are a little foggy, but I don't think that gets in the way of understanding who Welch is in this situation. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on with her, but that's my sense of it. And I don't know if we're ever going to get more clarity around that, but that seems to make sense in my mind. But then Hank explains who Welch is, and he uses Myers-Briggs, which is a personality measurement thing, which is also totally pseudoscience at this point. It was designed by two women in like the 1940s who had no science degrees, nothing like this. And it's useful for just kind of understanding what your natural proclivities are. He defines her as ISTP, which is introverted, sensing, thinking, perceiving. And that's in contrast to somebody who would be extroverted, intuitive, feeling, and judging. And his justification was that means that she's basically this calm, kind of nerdy, non-judgmental person, but also kind of naive. And that's who she is.
Accurate. I did like, but also it's Fallout. Of course they'd use Myers-Briggs. But that's the thing. Of course that's what they would be using.
It's also funny that that's confirmed that that exists in the Fallout universe.
Yeah, because it would make sense. Yeah. I mean, because it's anything pseudoscience would be like, yep, that is science in the Fallout universe.
Right. That totally tracks. Yep. All right. So let's talk about the ghoul saving Lucy. And this is a wonderful moment because it harkens back to some things. I want your take on it before I delve into some of the details here.
What I loved about it was, you know, obviously he wounds Hank. He doesn't kill him.
And he shoots him in the butt. Yeah, exactly.
And gives the gun to Lucy. And what I liked about that was it goes back to the line he had in the episode before about if you want to give the power source to someone good, you have to give it to someone bad. The ghoul accepted that Lucy's a good person. Mm-hmm. And I don't think earlier on, he was basically trying to tempt her. It was more devil on the shoulder. He kept doing things to tempt her to prove you're no better than me. You're none of these things. And it seems like over the course of this season, primarily, she swayed him. And showed him, no, I actually am a good person. And so now he's just saying, effectively, I don't know what to do with this guy. I would kill him, but here.
Right.
You make your own call.
It's a total flip of what happens in the first episode of the season. Because when they are fighting the
Raiders.
The Great Khans. And she shoots a guy in the butt. And then he has to put him out of his misery. He's now flipped that around, shoots Hank in the butt, gives her a gun, is like, and there's actually a quote from that episode where he says, what exactly is it you plan on doing once we find your daddy? We going to do it like usual? You put a bullet in his ass, leave it for me to put one in his head. And that's totally flipped.
And then there we go.
It connects back. Yeah, it rhymes like George Lucas would say. Yes. All right. So that was a cool scene. But then, of course, we're going to have more ghoul and more Lucy stuff. But let's jump over to Norm and I call them the 31
this
Vaulties.
This scene was so bad. I'm sorry. This scene was terrible.
Okay. So why was it terrible?
Because numerous things. First off, the Vaulties, well, I have my own opinion on the Vaulties, which I'll get to probably later. But the whole thing about the Rad Roach's attack, he hides behind a chair and all the Rad Roaches go, all right, not going to bother with him.
And they just attack the other people.
Yeah. Then he's standing in a room by himself, surrounded by Rad Roaches. The door opens a little bit and all the Rad Roaches skip him and go into the room.
Yeah.
And then later, the Rad Roaches, he opens the door. It was a closed door. Somehow it's like
the roaches are dead. It's like they killed each other.
Monty Python, right? Where they both end up stabbed. And I was like, sorry.
They probably could have set it up a little bit better. But I'm interested here in not only the fact that these Vaulties are clearly idiots at this point. Like, we can tell that they're idiots. First of all, there's mob mentality. This is something that we see happens across the season. Ronnie is playing to that mob mentality by, like, taking control of the rest of them, but they all just kind of follow suit. And this is something that echoes in so many other groups. It's showcased in the way the Legion works. Mm-hmm. Same exact kind of mentality. The people of Freeside, we see that there's mob mentality working there. And the regular vault people in vaults 33 and 32 also have this mob mentality, which is completely contrasted by our hero characters. That's what I'll call them. Maximus, Thaddeus, even Lucy, the ghoul. They all push back on the status quo in their own ways and don't just go with the group. Unlike what we see in so many of these other groups. And I think that was kind of the point of this, along with the idea that, and confirmation that Buds was not super managers who were very capable people. It was almost like it was this side project just given to Bud in order to fill it with just these idiots who were just going to follow protocol.
They called it out. Some of them started the work that week.
Right.
Like it was, Hank, every scene we see of Hank back in the past, he was an idiot.
Right.
You know, I'm forgetting her name. I'm sorry. The woman from Canada who's now got an eye patch.
Steph.
Yeah. Same thing. Like, well, she was actually clever, but all of these people were new employees. So Buds, you know, it's a weird twist. We think,
assistants. They're like,
No, these are very low level employees who don't know anything.
Which seems to imply that maybe they were supposed to be the target of the FEV second phase plan or something like that.
We don't know. Yeah, that,
right.
And the second phase will be interesting. I think where this whole scene is setting up with what we see is for he's going back to save the vault. Actually, vaults, plural.
Mm-hmm. Norm's going back to the vaults.
That'll be season three.
Who survived, and he drags her out of there. Yeah.
That'll be season three.
Yeah, I think so, too. I also love that the Radroaches are, like, the base bottom-level enemy that you fight in most Fallout games, and yet these people couldn't protect themselves against the simplest, weakest enemies in the games.
Well, I mean, it's like, that's why I told you. That whole scene, I was like, ugh. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Was like, ah.
Yeah.
All right. They can't all be winners, but we do get better ones after. So
whatever. Also, there's a little detail here. Norm stops to help somebody, helps to try to save somebody, which shows that, again, he is not working by this mob mentality, but he's also just genuinely a good person. He knew they were trying to kill him, and yet he goes out of his way to try to help somebody.
Well, that's the irony of Hank. I mean, that's the whole concept. Hank raised two children to be better people.
Yes.
Than he was.
Right.
He didn't even, I'm not even sure if he realized it. Now it's probably more of a credit to his wife, who he then murdered. But
true.
Side note. You know?
True. Yes.
Well, I guess he turned into a ghoul. He tried to murder her.
He tried to murder. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the Freeside fight, the Maximus and the Death Claws. Man, I should have done a final count of how many Death Claws Maximus actually took down and then also had help taking down. Like, he stood toe to toe with a number of them. Dude completely proved himself. What did you think?
All right. So the whole fight scene is, first off, funny, which is important. Like, the way that the Death Claw just blows up when it hits it with a rocket.
Yeah.
Exceptional. Thank you. Good job. Because this game was, I mean, I'm more going back to Fallout 1 and 2. You could, the Death Claws would blow up, the body would slide across, it would come into pieces.
Or the bloody mess perk in later games. Yeah.
It would look like, it reminded me of some of that. I was like, okay, first off, good job cinematically, giving me my nice little homage to some of my favorite games. Mm-hmm. But I did like the fight scene because it was like just... This is the super power armor, for lack of a better word.
Right.
And then, of course, the people in Freeside just betting on it. Like, whatever.
And the one guy picks up the shotgun, and I was so hoping that he was going to help out, and then he just doesn't.
Yeah. But then we do get what was, I think, the best scene in the entire show. I mean, when I say show, I mean both seasons, every episode. Mm-hmm. That scene... Of the 50 cal, you know,
the NCR anti-material soldier. Rifle. Yeah.
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 The
NCR soldier taking that shot.
That's
sniping
that's
in the head.
I actually teared up because it was the memory hit so hard of like, this is something I've devoted hundreds of hours of my life to. And they nailed it. It was just the way the cinematic shot was, looking over the head and the bullet coming out and in. It was, you know, it was VATS, obviously. And you just had that moment of, oh, this is perfect.
Yeah. For people who haven't played, there's a scene in the opening of Fallout New Vegas where you see an NCR Ranger shooting a gun just like that from this like crow's nest type of position. And that was... imitated when Lucy was fighting the Kings. They did a similar shot where they zoomed in on her and then they pulled back as the bullet came out of the gun. And then here they actually did it with the NCR Ranger. And that's why this is something that people who have played the games are responding so positively to, because it just reminds them of that moment, that it's in the intro of the game. It's like, you can't miss it if you've played the game. So, and it is the anti-material rifle that he uses there. So I've got a few other notes here.
Please.
We get a reason for why the Death Claws are on the Strip. House confirms that the Enclave planted them there, which is something they've done before. In Fallout 2, they put intelligent Death Claws in Vault 13. So this is clearly something they're capable of, something they've done in the past, and something they did again in order to indirectly get in the way of House's plans, it seems. So that totally tracks. Thaddeus bets 500 caps on Maximus surviving. And this is interesting in a few different ways. First of all, he has this wonderful quote where he says, "I used to make money for a living."
Yes.
Which was another one of the best lines in the entire episode. Yeah,
yeah. Thaddeus is great this season.
Thaddeus has been fantastic.
Yeah.
And he stands up as a hero. Like, he comes across as the cowardly lion. And I saw a picture somebody posted online of the three of them marching in the previous episode with Dogmeat. And they were like, look, it's the cowardly lion, the Tin Man, and the Scarecrow with Toto going to save Dorothy. And I was like, oh, that tracks. That also kind of means that House might be the wizard. And yet he's this man through this veil. Holy crap. Wizard of Oz symbology there. That's kind of cool. But Thaddeus bets on them. And then he goes up and shoots at the Deathclaw and helps him out. And then, of course, the second shot comes and it's not him. And he's like, nope, it's not me. He looks over there and it's like the NCR guy. And then while Maximus is holding his own with the Deathclaws, you can see in the scenes where it zooms in on his head that the details in his HUD are accurate to when you're in power armor in the game. And there's actually showing where the power armor is taking damage as he's in the fight, which is super cool. And then, of course, the scenes with Maximus and him remembering his dad saying that someday he'll be a good man. And the theme here is Maximus has been looking for a good person to give the diode to. He found Lucy and thinks she's a good person, all of this. But this is the moment where he stands up and is a good person. It's when he overthinks things, he messes stuff up. But when he just acts on instinct, he does good things. And then the power armor breaks down and he pulls himself out of it. And then, which is something that can happen in the games, right? Like, your power armor gets messed up and you're like, fine, I'll just fight without the power armor. And then he picks up the roulette wheel and a roulette wheel goes up to 36 in the numbers on the outside. But this one, if you zoom in, it goes up to 38 because it's from the lucky 38.
Of course.
All interesting, right? And that's something you would do in Vegas where you would have like themed games in your casino. And then he picks up a pool cue, which is a weapon in the games that you can use. And the symbology of him here standing in a fairly clean white shirt and khakis, like a white knight standing against the dragon or something like that, was just like, I was like, oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. So there you go. Those are my thoughts on Maximus. Also, when the NCR marches up, it's the same woman that we saw earlier in the season, right? And she's leading them. And clearly, this is one of those things a lot of fans lamented. They're like, why did they reduce the NCR? The NCR is gone. There's only these two people left. And it's like, no. They're still working on stuff. And here they are showing up.
Because the other one got captured by Hank.
Right.
And so that's the whole thing. It's like, what's important to me about this. I also, they needed this. Because the whole thing is the NCR, they've been hinting at for a while. And the idea, and we've all been wondering this, because one of the big questions they haven't answered is, hey, what's the canon ending?
I've discussed this a little bit. And this is something that comes up a lot. Somebody posted on the Discord and they were like, hey, I think the canon ending from New Vegas is this. And I've mentioned on previous episodes that I don't. They responded and said, well, Tom doesn't like that question. And I'm like, it's not that I don't like the question. It's that it is the wrong question to ask. And let me justify this real quick.
Please.
For anybody who might be still thinking that I'm just pushing it. I think it's I don't want to talk about it. It's not that I don't want to talk about it. It's that the writers and Todd and the producers have very specifically said in interviews that they did the best they could in order to avoid any specific canon ending, which means that if there are things that hint at a specific canon ending, that's just coincidence. They did not intend it. And a lot of people treat lore, and I'm sure you've probably felt this way with the 40K Lorecast before, they treat it as if they're uncovering history, but really what we're uncovering is literature and art. And literature and art have intent from the authors, whereas history doesn't. So if you see circumstantial evidence that was not intended by the writers, then it's just coincidence and it's just headcanon. So that's my take on it, is that like they didn't meet, like in the 15 years that it's been, there's not a canon ending. They circumvented that, and you could explain out any coincidences by, well, it's been 15 years and other stuff could have happened and we just didn't know what happened. An example of that would be the bombing of Shady Sands. There's nothing in the games that talk anything about the bombing of Shady Sands. That was new to the lore in the time period between the games and the show.
I think they imply, nothing about Shady Sands, but I know when you're playing New Vegas, there is some comments about the NCR, because Shady Sands is the origin of the NCR. There's right. Isn't there a comment? Man, God, it's been while since I played that game.
There's comments about how things had become kind of bureaucratic and bogged down in policies and bad people being in charge and being lazy and not doing the right things and that kind of stuff. But there's nothing that says that Shady Sands was bombed.
Oh, yes, but you also, the timeline doesn't line up anyway, because the Shady Sands bombing would have happened after that. But yeah, so we'll see. It's one of those areas where, like, it's hard for me because on the one hand, I do like it when they give me a canon ending. I would like to know.
Yeah, it's fun.
Because the thing is, it's weird not having it. You know, you and I do Retro Recall. Older games didn't give you that option. So I also was raised on games that had one ending. And now it's like, you have like seven different endings.
Right.
Okay.
So that was their goal, is that they didn't want to alienate any of the players and any of the players' mm-hmm. decisions. And so they've created a world that just kind of moved on without the events of the player. And that was the idea. And that's what they stated. So to say that, like, well, yeah, but they still hid details that show which ending they chose as canon when they're very specifically said they didn't choose anything to be a canon ending. It's just, it's weird to me, right? It's odd.
Yeah. I mean, but either way, I'm happy to see the NCR back. I mean, obviously, it's setting up. The irony is they're setting up an NCR Caesar's Legion and probably House. The funny thing is that in some ways, I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but in some ways they're setting up, if they wanted to, Season 3 could actually become a repeat of New Vegas.
Yeah,
in fact, because you've got the three factions.
Right, and that was something I realized too. It also could be a way to set up a sequel game if they happen to be working on like a New Vegas 2 type of game, because now you're set up in a way where things are kind of similar. The landscape is similar to the way New Vegas played out at the beginning of that game. But now you could use the show as a canon ending in order to move forward on, which
100%
makes it easier for the developers. So there you go. Let's talk Hank and Lucy. They come out on the surface. Hank says, "I was worried the wasteland changed you," which is interesting because she's proving that, like, it did some, but not, but she's still fundamentally the same person.
Exactly.
And then what did you think about the scene with him and the miniaturized mind control device and all of that?
Well, first of all, it's hard to tell what's going on, because it's like, is he under mind control? Is he not under mind control?
Like, was he faking it?
Well, in the sense, because Lucy has it in her hand. So she's put it on him, but has she turned it on?
Right. She hasn't turned it on yet. She's waiting. She, like, I think that's fairly, if you look back at she's debating to turn it on or not. She hasn't turned it on yet.
Yeah.
And I think that's heavily implied. And then he takes it he pulls his out of his pocket. And it's, if you look at the dial, it's turned all the way up to completely forget things. So he's not faking when he hits the button, unless it just didn't work. But all signs point to his mind is wiped. He does not remember. In order to protect the secrets of the Enclave.
Right. And that's what this is. And so that's where what I couldn't judge was, you know, because it was kind of a weird thing. Like, what is Lucy up to here? Why has she put this on him, for lack of a better phrase?
Because she doesn't want to have to kill him. And it also plays to this idea of, like, he's getting a taste of his own medicine, which is, of course, thematically fun. But also, if she's going to bring him to justice, she has no way to do so. She can't force him to leave. She doesn't want to have to kill him. And so now this becomes the other option, is like, well, do I, like, and you can see that his words are, this is an example of his words taking root in her mind and tempting her to be as bad as he is by then using the device on him. So she's debating all of these things. And then he takes that option away from her and just does it to himself, which doesn't confirm that she wouldn't have followed through with it. She was tempted to.
Yeah, but he wipes his own mind. I mean, it's a cool scene. It was a little bit tragic to me because I forget the name of the actor. I just like him a lot as an actor. So I was like, I don't want him gone.
My guess is that he's not going to be gone. He's going to stay there, and House is going to, like House said, everyone eventually works for him.
It'd be great.
House is going to use him in this scenario now that his mind is wiped, because he's a capable individual who has ties to these interesting characters who are important.
If he can. I mean, it'd be great because, again, just good actor. That's more that piece. Let's not lose the good actors. But
I would put money on that one. I'm pretty sure he's not going to be gone.
Yeah, it's too good of an actor.
We don't know how thoroughly well these devices work or if the mind wipe is permanent. It may be a temporary thing. Maybe it's reversible. Mm. Maybe if you remove the device over time, your memories come back. Right. These are all potentials because it's fiction and they can write it however they want.
Do whatever you want. It's not physics. Yeah. This is let's have fun. But yeah, I think what I like though is now we get to kind of the end of the season, which is the most important piece, which is.
Oh, so real quick, one other quote Hank says is good as new, implying not only is his mind wiped, but he was not good and now he is because he doesn't remember any of the bad things he did.
Yeah, the only thing on the mind wipe that's a little bit interesting is how does the mind wipe work when you're sitting in the middle of the wasteland?
Yeah. Like, what do you even do? Well, how do you survive?
That's the only piece of it where it's like, how does this kind of function? Because like Hank's memories would have been of pre-wasteland. Mm-hmm. The other people, whatever.
Right.
But even talk, because even when they're, stuff's coming to me right now, but even when they're in the room and Lucy first meets all the people and they're like, they're doing like all the musical building the things, it talks to the woman, like, oh yeah, she used to murder people, and she smiles back at him. So it's almost like it doesn't wipe all your memories because she seemed to understand some of those things.
So I would read that as her mind is wiped. She didn't remember it, but she was also hit with the pleasant thing from Welch. So her natural response was just like, oh, hey, whatever that means. Okay. Like,
okay, maybe.
Because it was ignorance. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I'm like, it was just another thing. I'm like, how does he not
Right. it was the NCR guy who was serving them dinner. And Lucy asks him, like, do you remember me? And he's like, well, we just met like yesterday. He mentions like the more recent time that they met, but can't remember anything beyond that. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that's how that works.
That's my guess, but it was just a thing.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk Steph.
Yeah.
So we get some interesting reveals here. One of the things that I posed as I was talking with the patrons last week, and somebody pulled up the idea of like, well, isn't Steph's timeline really quick? Like if the events of her leaving Canada were recent and then she makes her way to Vegas, gets employed by House, and then somehow gets to become part of Vault-Tec super quickly in order to then be put in Buds, like, how does that happen in such a short period of time? Because their estimation was that a lot of these events were earlier on than I think they were. My argument against that, I also realized later on, is oftentimes we see Janie at different points of time that coincide with some of these other pre-war events, and she is physically the same age. I mean, she's physically the same actress, but if they were years ahead, she would have been littler. And these feel like anybody who's a parent knows that like there's a big difference between the way your kids look from one year to the next. Like that is a big thing.
Oh yeah. This happened fast. And but that was the whole thing, was because she's fleeing Canada, which is, for, those people who don't know, it's a war zone.
It's been annexed,
annexed by the U.S. and we are, I think, genociding the Canadians.
There's some of that. Yes.
I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Yeah, so she has, and so how does she work her way into the vault? Simple. She marries Hank.
Right. And so that was the thing, is that like last week they were like, well, but how did she get to become part of Vault-Tec if she was working for House so quickly? And I was like, well, we see her cart away Hank. It was just like an off comment. I was like, what if she seduced him? And I'm like, I know that's kind of a terrible thing to, assume, but like, maybe that's what happened. It turns out that's what happened. So that's how she gets involved with not only Vault-Tec, but probably the Enclave. Was through Hank.
Well, and this becomes kind of the one question where the Enclave comes in. Because, for example, Hank in one of the early scenes says, sir, if you're listening, I'm continuing your work.
Yes.
Which I think a lot of us, I assumed was House.
Me too. I talked about that on that episode. Yeah. And then later on, as the evidence started to mount, I was like, I think he wasn't actually talking to House here. I think he was talking to the Enclave.
And then at the end, we discover he wasn't. Yes. And we keep seeing this thing.
Right.
We
also he wasn't talking to House.
We had this scene in, I believe it was the first season, maybe it was second season, where they're, Big Mountain, House, they're all in the room. Mm-hmm. And the ghoul's wife looks up and there's someone watching above.
Yes.
It's the Enclave.
It's the Enclave.
And then, And then House admits that, oh, there's an investor or an owner within Vault-Tec.
An investor, a hidden party, a hidden player. Yep. Like, yes.
And that's the Enclave. So the question then becomes, these people all seem to know about the Enclave. So when and how do they know about the Enclave? So, for example, it's pretty obvious Steph doesn't know about the Enclave.
She doesn't.
Hank has told her something.
Right. Yeah. She knows only as much. And I had the same conclusion. She's not part of the Enclave, but she knows enough about it through probably manipulating Hank to know that he had a Pip-Boy that would be a way to contact them.
Yeah.
And that's why she's unsure when she turns it on. She's like, I've heard you guys are always listening, but here, hey, here's what's up. So she's reaching out to them, but she isn't already included as part of them. Now, there's some symbolism that happens here. We see her in her wedding dress. She's wearing all white, contacting the Enclave. We see her in a white outfit in the airport with younger Hank. And Hank is traditionally wearing a black tie on a white shirt. Every time, and I bet if you even look at Wilzig, the majority of the time that we see anything representing Enclave in the series, it's black and white because they think, well, not only is that traditionally their colors are very black and white, but also they think in very black or white ways. You're one of us or you are the enemy. You are a human or you are lesser than human.
Yeah.
Right. So
it's
got to be intentional, and it totally matches up with the wedding dress and all of that, and shows that she is of the mindset of the Enclave more so than she is a Vault-Tec or anybody else.
Oh, very much so. I mean, she's a survivalist. I mean, that's the whole thing about Steph, is that she's a survivalist.
Right.
And that is what the Enclave, ironically, are and are not, because they kind of force everyone
for themselves, they are. Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah.
They also, they caused all this. So,
well, that's the assumption. And I saw a recent interview right after the episode came out with some of the cast and then Todd Howard as well. And one of the questions that was posed to him and Jonathan Nolan was, do we know now that the Enclave dropped the bombs, or is that something that's still vague? And Jonathan Nolan tossed it back to Todd, and Todd was like, well, that's something we still like to play with. And we're going to continue to leave breadcrumbs, but I really enjoy the idea of it never fully being confirmed. So
no,
we can assume
right
it was
that.
Them, but we still don't have hard evidence that it was.
Well, I mean, it could even be like a fun movie reference here, Spies Like Us moment, where maybe, you know, they didn't drop them, but an agent over in China caused the China to launch the bombs. That's you can go however you want with this. It gets fun, you know, for lack of a better phrase. So,
right.
Let's see what this is. You know.
Yeah. So back to Steph. I really enjoy so when Hank brings up Steph after they're outside of the vault, he and Lucy are outside of the vault, he goes, well, that's complicated or something like that. And it looks so weird. But you start to realize that Steph was woken back up after he tried to kill his wife.
Yes.
And was now part of the vault, and he's older and she's younger. Did they have an affair? It also raises questions. Stephanie lost her husband. But is the baby Hank's?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows? That's a good point.
Raises some interesting questions there. Also, she co-taught the school with Lucy in the vault. And she's almost like a stepmom, sort of, to Lucy. And Lucy considered her friend, like her best friend. So, also weird. You know, like that creates these
weird...
Yeah,
your best friend's your secret stepmom.
Right.
That's weird.
That's weird.
That is weird.
It's weird. Yeah. So, let's see. What else do I have here?
We haven't talked about the ghoul getting to the empty holding of his wife and daughter.
Yeah. We're getting there. I just want to make sure I'm looking at my notes, make sure I don't have anything else left to do with Stephanie here. This was interesting. So in Vault 33, they all pile up on her door and they're banging down. They're basically yelling to, kill her.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then that makes Chet uncomfortable because he's like, I didn't want it to escalate like this, which again coincides with the mob mentality that we see other vault people, the legionnaires, all of them doing. But also, when Chet and Norm discover what happened to Vault 32, what was sprayed on the wall behind Norm when he was looking at the computer, it specifically said death to management.
Yep.
And so did this same exact thing already happen in Vault 32 previously? It seems like it probably did.
Buds. Right. Are not great managers.
And I think in that scene where we see Chet being like, oh, death to, I think that's what he's doing is we're seeing him remember that was what happened to Vault 32 previously. Yeah. So.
And this is callbacks. where I kind of wonder if, so now you say that, I wonder if Steph just killed herself. If what happens is this is
if she ends up stuck.
Yeah. Well, because what I'm wondering is what if that's the experiment? If the idea is to make a good manager, you have to have your vault not go into revolt.
Yeah, maybe.
Because that is the theme in most of the Fallout games. You go to the vaults and what happens is
the experiments are so extreme that the overseer
there's some sort of a revolt and the overseer ends up dead over and over. And I mean, that's like every vault. But not every, enough.
Enough for it to create a pattern. It doesn't just happen one time. Yeah.
Exactly. There's a theme. And so that becomes a question phase two. Well, what is phase two? No one knows what phase two is. We saw something about FEV, but we've already seen a super mutant and we're way too late. So FEV's long been into the game at this point. So I don't think it's going to be the launch of FEV, but it could just be something. It would almost be funny where it was like, oh, okay. Yeah. We'll just reset the vault now. You know, they just let them all kill each other and then they reset the vault. Okay.
Right. Because the Enclave is still listening and they probably still have control. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to Colorado and there's like a Vault Zero, which is this hub center for the vaults, and they somehow take control of that and can use it, then they could probably continue using the vaults. And there was the big reveal that like the Wasteland is the experiment. That was brought up in this episode as well, which kind of implies that anything else the Enclave is going to do will be to continue the experiment of the Wasteland as a whole. So that's a whole nother level to consider here. I just got my new shipment in from Quince and I am so excited. I finally have a jacket that makes me feel like a college professor. And I know that sounds kind of funny, but you know what I'm talking about. I've been really into corduroy lately and this is the warmest, softest and fashionable jacket. It looks so good. I can pair it with jeans or nicer pants. I can wear it out because it's cold out or just because I want to look nice. And Quince makes products that last even over multiple wearings. They've become my go-to place to look first for new clothing. They have premium fabrics. They cut out the middleman by working directly with top factories. The value for the quality is just crazy. I mean, they have between a 4.5 and 5-star rating by thousands of people who wear their clothes every day. So go check them out. And also keep in mind that you can get free shipping and 365-day returns with my code. So go right now, go to quince.com/falloutlore, all one word, for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to build your wardrobe and to love it, and you will. Don't keep settling for clothes that don't last. Go to quince.com/falloutlore for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/falloutlore. There's a world of opportunity out there, beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you. To dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transforms lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries. Learn about the benefits and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve. But here, let's talk about the ghoul and the cryo chamber reveal.
Yes.
What'd you think about that?
Not surprised, if I'm being honest, because it was like how it would be really weird. So then what the rest of the series is him protecting his wife and daughter from the Wasteland.
Right.
It was basically one of two things would happen. Either he wasn't going to open it and was going to leave them there safe, or he was going to open it and they weren't going to be there. That was kind of the inflection point there. Yeah.
Yeah. I called it out on a previous episode. It's kind of like when you see a character die off camera And it's like, they're not dead because we didn't see their body. Well, they showed the containers, but they didn't show their faces or bodies inside them. So that was my assumption early on, was like, oh, they're not really in there.
What is interesting, though, is the fact that she left the postcard in there. His wife obviously left the postcard. So his wife wasn't killed. So we know she wasn't killed. His point being that she's alive. What this implies, because before we started, you and I were talking about Fallout Tactics.
Right.
And Fallout Tactics becomes, so Vault Zero is in Fallout Tactics. And the problem with, if you haven't played Fallout Tactics, I understand why, but I like the game, so whatever.
It's not a fan favorite, but sure.
Yeah, I am. I realize I stand alone on this hill of like, no, it's a good game. I've accepted that, but I really do enjoy the game. And in the reveal in Fallout Tactics is that the Vault Zero was meant to be the super vault for all the best, and they just were, but they were lazy, so they just put a computer in charge, and then that computer turned into Skynet. That's kind of what ends up happening. But then the Brotherhood of Steel EMP it, and problems are solved effectively. So what it appears to show here is that she did go into cryo at some point.
Yes.
And then came out of cryo at some point and knew that her husband would be looking for her and left a breadcrumb within there.
Right.
Which kind of is a lot of these pieces, but and then saying Colorado again, it doesn't have to be Vault Zero,
but it connects to the airport conversation where he basically they're having a conversation about, well, we need to go somewhere safe, maybe we need to get even further away, like Colorado he brings up, and then he when he knows he's in trouble and they're going to take him away, he leans in and is like, basically says like, let me take the fall for this, you didn't know anything, you didn't do anything. And that is super important. Like, you have to understand here, if she were to have been part of what happened, they stole very valuable property from the company and gave it away. Like, she stole millions of dollars, probably billions of dollars worth of, like, that would have been terrible, which is why he was then, you know, treated this way.
Arrested, but somehow escapes. That's the part that'll be explaining that in season three is going to be interesting to me. They'll do
my guess is my guess. Okay, so here's my guess, is that the Enclave, the president, the Enclave now has the diode. They can't admit that they have a like this very hidden special technology, so they can't actually put him on trial. But what they can do is call him a communist, ruin his name, get him kicked off of any movie projects he's going to be on, which is what we see is why he's doing birthday parties. And so then she has to distance herself from him by saying, okay, well, we're getting a divorce. I didn't realize he was doing these terrible things. He's not a part of my life anymore. I didn't have anything to do with it. Right. And I'm pretty sure that's how it plays out. And it makes sense. I mean, how do you try somebody for something that's secret technology without revealing the technology in discovery during the judicial process? Like, that doesn't work. Right.
Right, but I mean, it's more, the reason I'm kind of laughing about it is more like, okay, so the Enclave just doesn't kill him.
But, but they're not out in the open yet. That's the other thing. I get where you're going.
That's all I'm saying. Like, oh, well, look, guys, we have to do this on the up and up. Really? Like, we're about to send the world into a nuclear winter, but, you know, We don't want to, you know, mess with habeas corpus.
I get it. I mean, it seems like the counter argument to that is oftentimes in their pre-war events, they've been less hands-on with things.
Yeah, it's fine.
Like, you see Wilsig show up in the elevator and he makes threats, you know? But yeah, I totally get where you're going.
It's a movie trope. I will always be reminded of Dr. Evil, where it's like, well, you know, it's like, well, sharks will get him. I have a pistol right here.
Right, just shoot him. Yeah.
Just shoot him in the head. Right. We can do it together. And like, the sharks will get him. I trust it. It's just one of, and so whenever it happens.
It's a trope. It's a TV and movie trope so that you don't ruin a character. Yeah.
Well, because the truth, if you don't do it, the show's over in 2 seconds, where it's like, well, the end. Oh, okay. Fair enough. You know.
Absolutely. I totally get it. But it's also fun for me to be like, okay, but is there a justifiable reason for why that is the case? You know, and try to give the writers the benefit of the doubt. But absolutely, like, it's totally fine to call it out as just like, this is a trope. You know, like, I called out the, you know, they're not dead trope because they didn't see their bodies. You know, like, of course, you know, this is just the way shows work. So they're at the airport. The song that plays at the airport is "I've Got You Under My Skin." which is interesting because it's a love song. We can see that they've now reconciled. They're under each other's skin. They're, you know, like, oh, they're planning for their future, all of that. But also the device is under Hank's skin.
Yep.
So, and an airplane just flew over. So maybe you're getting some Foley work there. So that's a reference to the micro device, which we now know is in who knows how many people out in the wasteland because Hank let them out into the world. And I've seen some speculation online where people were like, well, for sure, we're going to get like somebody in the show that we've already seen. Maybe one of the heroes is going to be revealed that they have this implanted. I don't know that that's the case. I don't think any of the, especially the characters that we've met so far, especially the hero characters, are going to have that implanted because there's no connection to them other than Lucy having been with him. Yeah, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, the timeline wouldn't work.
But I think we're going to get probably an important character or two in season three that we come to find out later have been mind controlled and we didn't know it. Something like that.
Yeah,
so I think probably something there. Let's see, what else do I have here? We went through that stuff. Let's talk about the end of the episode, because I feel like we've hit most of this other stuff. When the Barb thing in the airport, she says, does it feel like we left Vegas winners? Like, nobody leaves Vegas as a winner. You know, like, that's the thing.
And then it all blows up.
On top of it, as they're walking out, Cooper notices the posters behind him, the ads behind him, and there's him advertising Vault Tech, and so that feels uncomfortable. But then there's one of House that says, you never know. Yep. Like, you never know if you might win $1 million.
Also, within that House says when they were walking through the tunnels, he says, I rigged every single thing in Vegas, every single slot, every game I controlled. And his whole thing is, no one won anything in Las Vegas without me effectively approving it. And that is the idea here, is all of these things I have control over. And
that question of like, it starts to build this tension in Cooper's mind of like, you never know, like you seem like you're walking out having done the right thing, but you never know. And then they find out like, no, they did not. They are not winners.
They're not winners. No.
Right.
Not at all.
All right. So let's talk about the end. We have this reveal of this enclave base in the mountains of Colorado. It's probably Colorado. That seems to be implied here.
Yeah, you're right. It implies Colorado. It's definitely the Sierras. We'll put it that way. It's the Sierra Mountains.
It seems
mountains.
Like it. Right.
It's definitely the Sierra Mountains. So it's Colorado, Utah. I guess it could be Oregon or Washington. But
maybe.
Most likely Colorado.
Most likely. And it's probably going to coincide where the ghoul ends up trying to go in the next season or something like that, right? And you talked about Vault Zero. Maybe this is coordinated somehow with Vault Zero. Don't know about that. I do know, and I found this on that somebody figured this out online because they recognized the building. The building is the Brooklyn Army Terminal, and it's in a regular like urban location.
Oh, that makes sense.
In Brooklyn, New York, right? And they took it as like digital like VFX and then implanted it in the mountains and it's a really good job because it looks amazing. So that's really cool. So that is a real extremely large building in real life. Yeah. So I thought that was really cool. Also, when we get the little zoom in, we see an iBot floating by.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder, are we going to see iBots floating around in the wasteland again, spouting their propaganda?
Yeah. Playing music.
Season three, play music, having, you know, like, like, I don't know, notes from the president about the future of the wasteland. I don't know, that kind of stuff. But then again, confirmation about phase two was initiated. What does that mean? We don't really know. Yep. And then we have the extra end scene after the credits.
Yes.
What do you think about
this? I mean, awesome is the best way to put it. I mean... Right. Liberty Prime was both the dumbest and coolest thing I've ever seen.
Like, I think we both Fallout 3 and Fallout 4.
I think all of us, when Liberty Prime and Fallout 3 happened, we're like, this is lame, but I want more of it.
No, keep but going. It's actually pretty cool. He's throwing nukes.
Yes, it was so funny. And so, Quintus getting access to it is... interesting.
Yeah. So Quintus gets access. He's basically like, I'm no longer trying to unify the Brotherhood. I'm taking things into my own hands. And he has a blueprint. Now, my assumptions here are he gets the blueprint from Area 51 or something like that, because that was part of the season. And it's Liberty Prime Alpha. It's not just Liberty Prime. So is this an earlier prototype version of Liberty Prime? Maybe. Or maybe it was a more finished version, or maybe a refinement to original Liberty Prime? So the lore is that they were working on it. This was a joint project by multiple groups.
Yeah.
And they were working on it for the U.S. government, and they were never able to fully power it in a way that it would actually work.
Right.
But with something like the diode, they would be able to power it, or the technology that replicated from the diode. Maybe they could power it. Right. On top of that, we have pictures of House standing in front of robot legs. And it's the picture that we see in the season is a play off of the picture that we see in Fallout New Vegas, because he owned Robco and they worked on robots. Robco also worked on Liberty Prime. It seems to be implying that Quintus is going to try to build a new Liberty Prime using parts and things that they tech that they found from Area 51. And maybe they're going to need a power source to do it, which means they're going to get tied up with the conflict over Vegas with the Legion and the NCR, which again plays into
brings us
similar
back to
things.
The Platinum Chip.
Yeah, I mean, that happened with the Platinum Chip in Fallout New Vegas, right? So now we're kind of back around to that again.
Yeah, I mean, and that becomes it, because it is, I mean, unless I'm mistaken, the power supply is there. It's still in Vegas. And now we've
House still has it. Yeah. Right. And that was the thing is that parties. The ghoul leaves. The ghouls is like he gives him the powers, the diode, and stays true to his word. He doesn't take it back. He leaves it with House. Mm-hmm. And the end scene is House's computer, which is now House, because he confirms that people tried to stab and beat his body and all of that, which is a wonderful reference to all the different ways players probably tried to kill him in the game once they came across his body. But he basically is saying, my body's no longer around. I'm in this machine and probably replicated over multiple servers, over multiple locations at this point.
Yeah.
But
he's got a big problem, because he's got Caesar's Legion bearing down on him. He's about to have the Brotherhood bearing down on him.
Potentially, if that's what this means. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the NCR. Lucy and Maximus are going to be stuck in the middle of it.
Yeah. So that this becomes, because then the NCR, it becomes a really interesting play on New Vegas, if I'm being honest. Of like, okay, so we're kind of redoing this, because, all right, now House used to have his, Robotrons. What were they?
Securitrons?
Securitrons. I knew it was close.
I always get Securitrons and Protectrons confused, because they're kind of synonyms of each other.
Close-ish, but far-ish. Right. Exactly, yeah.
Right.
But he had those. So he's now there. You can see them. They're broken and lying all over the place.
Right.
So how does this work? Also, by the way, the Enclave knows where he is. So he also will have that piece too. So what I'm hoping for in a season three is we get almost kind of a giant conflict in and around Vegas. Meanwhile, the ghoul is bearing down unknowingly on the Enclave.
Yes.
And becoming this becomes these multiple elements of this is how Fallout kind of is.
I'm on board with that as well. I think that we'll probably get something along those lines. Now, I would imagine that we're going to have something that continues to tie Lucy and Maximus to the ghoul.
Yeah.
So what is that? Maybe that is Hank. Maybe that is something they find out about the people behind the scenes, and they don't want the wasteland to go to war and everybody to kill each other. And so they try to find a solution to that. And
go and come back. I mean, the truth is he can't get it. There's no way he could solo his way into the Enclave, because we still haven't seen,
maybe he could
armor.
Use a mind wiped Hank in order to manipulate his way back in. That could be a thing.
The Enclave power armor yet. I mean, there's a lot of Enclave stuff, because we haven't seen full Enclave yet. That's kind of the thing. We've seen an Enclave scientist. We've seen an iBot and a couple people in like lab coats. We haven't seen full blown Enclave yet.
That's true. Or super mutants. We've seen the one super mutant, but there's got to be more super mutants out there. The other thing is that the ghoul is probably going to turn into a glowing one, right? Like he's got that thing in his body now, the uranium core in his chest from when the super mutant fixed him up. So
I forgot about that.
He turns into a glowing one.
Yeah.
Right. The other, I have some other questions about what's going to happen next season. What about Thaddeus? Is he turning into a centaur?
Yeah, Thaddeus is we had that scene where he shows the ghoul that the mouth,
the mouth, is, and then his arm falls off. Yeah.
And you know, obviously the ghoul looks at him and just goes, ah, like that's not ghoul. Because again, he's not a ghoul. He's just,
he's
undead.
He's a mutant of some sort.
Yeah. But that's about it. Yeah. Is it a centaur? I mean, the truth is they could also just make him something else. That's kind of half the fun of it. Yeah. Half the fun of it.
A herald like mutation that's just weird in some other way.
Yeah, exactly. So, because he's not radiation based, he's whatever that, you know, weird concoction was based. You
right.
know?
And we assume it's FEV, but we don't really know. So maybe FEV plus other stuff. Yeah. Or one of the things I speculated about was, remember when his foot was messed up before he drank the thing and it fixed him? Dog meat licks his foot. So does he get dog DNA in his body? And then that causes weird mutations as well, which would coincide with centaurs potentially.
No.
Because they're a mix of DNA.
I've seen people online saying, oh, he's turning into a centaur. My thing is, why? Like the centaur, because it's just the centaur is just such, it's not useless.
They're mindless monsters, like, right? Like, what's the point of that?
That's why, like,
where does this go?
Like,
where does this end?
It's one of those, okay, I have people trying to solve it, but I'm like, why? As a writer, why would you turn into a centaur? He's comedic relief, you know? So you're basically going to take comedic relief and then just kill him?
Make him useless and nonverbal.
That's kind of dark.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of dark.
I had the same speculation. I had the same question of, like, why would the writers want to go in that direction unless they head in that direction and then co-opt it and head in a different direction? Like, he then searches for a solution or a cure, and then that becomes something that doesn't fully fix him, but keeps him not from becoming just a mindless monster.
Because I don't think it's FEV because of the mouth in his neck. Like, that one's kind of off. There's something else going on here, but...
Well, centaurs and snallygasters and things like that were FEV caused, so... And they have multiple body parts, so... Maybe? I don't know.
We're
just going to have to see. Right now, you and I, we're just guessing, right?
This it's half the fun. Yep.
Yep. And then, I guess the final thing I want to bring... Well, two final things. One, Norm and Claudia survive. Your assumption is that he's headed back to the vaults.
Yes.
So, I guess we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, I think he's going back to the vault to save it. He's going to go back to the vault, and that will be... Because we still don't know if Steph ever diverted the water over. We never got clarity on that. So, I wouldn't be surprised that he's going to get back to vaults basically in rebellion. It wouldn't surprise me. And then he'll be the... And so, he's going to have to get back there and kind of save them.
He'll be the new leader? Yeah.
Yeah. And he'll have to bring them out because, you know, and then whatever phase two is, he's going to have to deal with it. Cause, I mean, I tease that phase two was just a revolt inside the vault, but whatever phase two is, he's going to have to deal with.
Yeah. My guess is that phase two is a wasteland large thing. It is a major, it's as big as something like Reclamation Day. It's not just these vaults. It's bigger than that would be my assumption. Mm. And that and it would make sense for the story arc to continue to get bigger, like expand and get bigger and bigger and bigger. This is something that will affect all of the United States or all of the entire world or something like that. Another thing I wanted to point out that I didn't bring up earlier is in questions about what happens next. You know, Hank is mind wiped. Mm-hmm. The Pip-Boy, House's Pip-Boy, is left on the ground by the ghoul. Does Hank find the Pip-Boy and start working for House?
Yeah, I mean that Pip-Boy. So, well, yes, no, because the how many Pip-Boys does the house have? That's the weird thing about House is it's everywhere.
Right. But you could have a bunch. But this one's just left on the floor. And if Hank gets curious and goes back in, or anyone, right? Lucy or Maximus, if they go back in and they're like, oh, a Pip-Boy, and they pick it up and House starts talking to them, all of a sudden now we have House continuing on into the story without us having to be in this location. So I think somebody's going to pick up that Pip-Boy.
Yeah, very much so.
And then... Final thing, if this Brotherhood builds Liberty Prime Alpha, and that we've already had hints that the Commonwealth is aware of what they're going on with the Paladin coming to visit and all of that, do we at some point end up with a Liberty Prime versus Liberty Prime Alpha battle?
So here's the thing.
What do you think?
I made that face only because I just still can't get over how bad the power armors look. Actually, I will say the NCR power.
Like the Death Claws. What did you think about the Death Claws? Yeah, NCR the power armor looked great.
So if they can make the Liberty Primes look great, I am all in. But they
and the show's been
great.
Successful, so their budget will probably keep
it's
increasing.
True. That is. I mean, it's also Amazon. You can afford it. But anyway,
yeah, right. listen, Jeff. Note. Jeff, yeah, exactly. Give us more Fallout. You don't need another yacht. Give us more Fallout.
You don't have to buy Venice for a weekend. You can just give us some more Fallout. More people will actually enjoy that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Right.
But I digress, and I don't want him taking away my Prime membership, so I don't want to be mean to him.
I'm canceling my Prime membership today because I don't need it anymore for the show.
I need my 2-day deliveries. So anyway,
I'm not giving Jeff any more money than I need
to.
This is on my list of things I don't spend money places I don't spend money at anymore. It's just listen, if you are part of the actual thing that Fallout's about, where wealthy oligarchs are causing the end of the world, I'm not contributing to that anymore. Sorry. Unless I have to do my job, which is create podcasts.
Oh, yeah. I had Warhammer supplies delivered by Amazon today for a tournament I'm playing in 2 days.
I get it.
So, yeah.
I get it.
But
anyway, I get it.
But, yeah, I think it'd be the Liberty Prime thing would be funny. My hope for season 3 really is just more of a... I actually want them to wrap some of the canon up. If I'm being honest, I would like them to... We have so many games at this point. I would like to see them start to wrap up, just put some connection pieces as to kind of what has occurred, what hasn't occurred. Maybe not necessarily, give a firm ending of Fallout New Vegas, but at least kind of just put some connection pieces in between some of these games. Especially, so one thing that I really loved about The Mandalorian is The Mandalorian would pull from pretty random Star Wars things.
Right, the cartoons and all sorts of things, yeah.
Yeah, one of my favorites was they actually pulled from Robot Chicken at one point.
Right.
There was a line from Robot Chicken that made it into, but I respected that. But what it did was, because there's so much Star Wars, they did a really good job of kind of pulling it back in. You don't necessarily have to tell me, hey, what's the canon ending of Fallout New Vegas? But if you can just kind of start bringing some of these disparate points together to just give me a better grasp of what has happened here.
Yeah. Well, a lot of what we haven't seen is things that happened on the East Coast, Fallout 3, Fallout 4. We haven't seen anything about the Institute. We haven't seen anything about Preston Garvey and the I want to say responders, but that's not the right word. The Minutemen. I lose words so easily.
Yeah.
So there's, and also a bunch of other Fallout 3 stuff. So there's a lot still out there. Heck, go ahead. Yeah.
What happened to San Francisco? I'm good in that one. Like, just that. Who won? Like, because that was the choice. Like, who did we side with before we went and took out the Enclave?
I don't know.
I'd appreciate it.
My guess is that they're not going to shy away with confirming things from Fallout 1, 2, or Tactics. But when it gets to 3 New Vegas and 4 and even 76, they're going to be a little bit a little bit vague on.
That's fine. But
Said they're going to do. So unless they change their minds, I expect that they'll just keep with that.
What was the Xbox games? The Brotherhood of Steel? Was that the Xbox game?
That one is not on the canon lists. That is at the bottom of the, anybody who...
That one wasn't very good. Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I've played every Fallout game I've ever made. And that one, I'm going to be honest,
that wasn't great.
I beat it. But I can't say I overly enjoyed it. As opposed to Tactics, which I do get grief from people. They're like, you enjoyed Tactics.
Yeah, that's usually a step above Brotherhood of Steel as a game. Still,
it's
at the bottom
good.
Of the list, but it's
Tactics
still better than that one.
Good. It's good. All right, never mind.
Well, we got to wrap this up, John. Thank you so much for joining me. This has been super fun. And is there anything you want to share before we wrap this up? Before we head out?
No, I'm good. This has been fun as hell. I mean, we are talking about one of my favorite video games. Oh, this is what I want to share. I'm still pissed off that they had a countdown clock, and the countdown clock was for a behind the scenes thing. I fell into the stupid trap. I was so excited, and my disappointment was so high.
Right. Can I address this really quick?
Please.
So I was on the hope train too. I was like, well, maybe this is going to be a thing. And then, of course, you go on the website, and it's just a piece of a website. And in retrospect, thinking through it, I'm like, okay, it's a piece of a website made by Amazon that has a bunch of elements where you can go and see 3D renders of different locations in the show.
Yeah.
And they have a countdown on another location that is connected to all of those things. This wasn't on a Bethesda site. This wasn't on Bethesda social media. It posted, you know, exclusively. Yeah. I'm sure they probably, you know, shared a post from Amazon on it. But also, you and I know how corporations work. Why would Bethesda give Amazon the right to a reveal for a game they're publishing that Amazon doesn't have any rights to, other than to make a show, right? Like, sometimes businesses coordinate marketing like this, but
I know. Look,
like, in retrospect, I was like,
it didn't make any sense, but I can still dream.
Yeah, I was dreaming too.
I buy lottery tickets on occasion too, Tom. It doesn't mean I don't think I'm gonna win the Powerball, but I have a good you know, 7 hours of maybe I'll have to go to work tomorrow, and then, you know, I have to go to work tomorrow.
Right. So. But the other piece of this is and I don't have any inside information on this. Sometimes I get pulled into things and I have some inside. I have no inside information on this, but it seems like it would be like this doesn't mean that we're not getting a Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas remaster.
Oh, yeah.
They did the Oblivion remaster. It sold like hotcakes. They're now going to release it on the Switch 2. It's going to sell even more. The studio who worked on that will have now 3 years experience working on that engine and updating it for Unreal and all of that stuff. And it's going to sell. And my sense of it is there just wasn't enough time to get that stuff finalized and get it out to the public, so they couldn't release it right now, which would have made a lot of sense, but it's just not ready. That's how game development works. But that doesn't mean we're not getting it at all. And my guess is we will probably get a release by about this time next year.
Yeah, that's true. It's candidly, I mean, we're both, you know, you're marketing. I mean, I'm sales. I will be honest. I just think it was a miss because they spent so much time in this episode doing shot-for-shot remakes of Fallout New Vegas that you could have released it at $100 and I would have bought it. Like, I was thirsting for that game.
Right. Here's why I think they missed is that they did not realize season one was going to be as popular as it was, which meant that they didn't know to put the resources into those remasters and make them a big priority. Everything was also delayed because of COVID, and the Oblivion remaster came out later than they expected. And that team was already busy with that and working on it. So by the time season one comes out, it becomes a huge hit. And Todd and team are like, hey, we need some synergy for season two. Well, imagine making a TV show is very difficult. Making a video game is very difficult. Try to coincide those things in a way
where
they match up without extremely delaying one or the other. That's an impossible task. No.
Yeah.
So,
and I get that. It was just more, I'd be disappointed.
Oh yeah. I was still super hopeful for it. I've been wanting to dive into, the lore out Wabbajack mod pack for Fallout 4. I have it downloaded and ready to go. I wanted to play it, but I was putting it off because I was like, if we get a Fallout 3 or New Vegas remaster this week, I'm playing that instead. But it didn't happen, so I'm going to go play that instead. So there you go. But how can people get a hold of you and check out your other stuff?
All right, so my other stuff is the Fallout is no, it's not the Fallout. My other stuff is the 40K Lorecast and the History of 40K. They're both available on Spotify, iTunes, etc.
Wherever you're listening to this, you can find it.
You can find it at the top of Warhammer 40K. Or if you like the side of Tom and my voice, you can check us out on Retro Recall, where we talk about old games, like actually Fallout 1 at some point we'll get to. But even older, like Battletoads, Lemmings, Doom,
Street Fighter 2.
Really kind of it's us jumping into some old
Sonic
nostalgia.
The Hedgehog.
Some of them are misses, I'll be honest. A couple of those games were like, well, this game sucked, but whatever, it's still fun to go back and have fun, but it is a good time. Come give us a listen. Listen to two middle-aged men talk about how much fun video games were when they were kids.
We were doing YouTube videos on it. Turns out that the audio podcast is better for this type of show than it is on YouTube. So it is only on audio. So go listen. And if you think it would be fun to hear two middle-aged guys go back in time 30 years and play a game they haven't played in 30, 35 years, and also just soak in the nostalgia of it all, then this is absolutely the show for you. Whether you were back there with us playing those games, or you're younger and you never had the chance and you want to hear some perspectives about the way game development has evolved over time, there's all sorts of stuff for lots of different people. So go check that out. Thanks again, John, for joining me. And
always good to be here.
I'll be back after just a quick break to go thank our patrons and all of that. So don't go anywhere. Big thanks to John for taking the time to join me this week. It's always a pleasure to hang out with him and talk Fallout. Also, thank you to all of the patrons who have signed up in the last 2 weeks. I didn't get to thank everybody last week because we were busy with the patron chat. So welcome to Jess C, Lyle D, JPH, Griffin, and White Broccoli. So glad that you decided to sign up and get ad-free episodes and anything else, depending on the different tiers. You can get t-shirts and stickers. You can join us for our patron chats every month. Also, I have to shout out our sentry bots who get shout-outs every week. Germinator, The Main Monkey, and Era M, thank you so much for your support as well. Also, if you'd like to help out in other ways, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave a 5-star review, I'll read it out on a future episode. Just like this, let's talk about Arcade Fire 87, who posted a comprehensive and well-structured. They wrote, as someone who has been a fringe fan of Fallout for a number of years, I finally decided to take on the daunting task of learning the lore. It's oftentimes hard between work and gaming for myself to dedicate long stretches of time to watch convoluted YouTube videos. Thank Adam for Tom and his bite-sized, easy-to-digest, and easy-to-retain lorecast. I already feel more informed just 10 episodes in than from the time of this review. There's over 300 episodes. I look forward to work now. Thanks to the show because it gives me something to enjoy while grinding through those 10-hour days. Thank you, Tom, for making it comprehensive, fun, and enjoyable. I hope it's not too late to say keep up the great work. Nope, not too late. And because of your support and everybody else's support, you keep the show going. So thank you very much for that. Also, this one from Jimmelpug. JMLPUG says, very informative. I'm a longtime Fallout fan, played all the games, etc. I am constantly learning while listening to every episode. Thank you for your work involved. So thank you for taking the time to leave those reviews. I really do appreciate it. Oh, and one last thing. Next week's episode, we're done with season 2, but that doesn't mean that you have to be done with watching Fallout content. I have a very special interview about a fan film project focused on Fallout. And then I'm so excited for you all to hear it. It's been recorded for a few weeks now and just waiting to get out there for the right release window after the show is done. So I hope you enjoy that. It's a little hint of what's coming. And then we'll be back to some of the more common episodes. I know a lot of people were enjoying the pre-war businesses and all of that. And we'll be getting back to that style of episode soon. And if there are other topics you have questions about, if you're somebody who's new to this podcast or new to the Fallout universe because you were pulled in from the TV show or whatever, please comment. Let me know what you would be interested in learning more about. And we'll see if there exists an episode out there, you can check that out already. But if it's something I haven't covered yet, then I'll consider putting it on the list. But thank you to all of you. Thank you for being a part of this community. I hope you have a wonderful week. Go put on some power armor and punch a deathclaw. I'll see you next time. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people, on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.